This is Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast. Answering the question today, are we hot or not? Today we're discussing The Substance, a film by Coralie Farger. Did I say that right?
Farger. I have no idea.
Probably.
I think probably not.
Coralie Farger, starring Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley and related media. This is Mark Linsenmeyer with a picture of me in the attic getting dumber and dumber.
This is Al Baker. I was going to do almost exactly the same joke. There's a picture of me in my attic getting prettier.
This is Sarah Lynn Bruck, and I'm so surprised that at my age, I'm happier than I've ever been in my whole life, but I'd give it all up to be 30 years younger and a little better looking.
This is Lawrence Ware coming to you from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, melting down into a puddle of blood.
This is such an uplifting film.
I was surprised you guys wanted to cover it, honestly.
Yes, we are looking to do something around the Oscars, Oscar relevant. The Brutalist is only in theaters. Thought maybe not that many people would have been able to see it, but this has been released onto streaming. At least it's free if you sign up for the trial Mubi subscription and cancel very quickly. I thought going into this, oh, this is a comment on aging in Hollywood. I didn't think it had much to say. That is not what struck me as the theme. This struck me just as a Twilight Zone episode, pretty much, with more gore.
Mm.
Yes, it's hard for aging women in Hollywood to be accepted, to persist, and people will give up a lot for stupid reasons to catch that glory.
It's certainly a theme. It's at least the inciting incident. The fact of how awful it is to grow older as a woman in Hollywood is what kicks off the action of the film. I think there's something in the ending, maybe, which is making a direct commentary on that as well. But yeah, I think it's honestly more interesting than a commentary on how awful it is to be a woman in Hollywood.
Interesting. Come on, Sarah. You advocated for this. Let's go.
Well, I mean, sort of. I mean, it is another horror movie, but it's a horror movie that kind of clonks you over the head with this theme that seems so obvious about, you know, your sense of self versus your public perception, which I don't think is just relegated to women, by the way, but it is something that we've seen throughout time. I mean, we also watched, or some of you watched Sunset Boulevard and Death Becomes Her, and we've seen this over and over and over again. So you kind of wonder if there's anything new to say about it, but I think we're still talking about it. I think there's a reason why we're still talking about it.
I thought The Substance was a good movie. I thought Demi Moore was really, really good. Not my favorite. I struggle with overly gory things, even though I love horror movies, but overly gory things, I really struggle with that. Body horror is a thing that I really don't like very much. But as far as the themes, I mean, I enjoyed the themes. I thought the themes were well explored. It was interestingly directed. Demi Moore is almost certainly going to win an Oscar for this film because she's really good in the film. And also, it's time for her. And also, you listen to her speech that she gave for the Golden Globes. She's kind of a shoe-in for the award. But, I was honestly just kind of surprised. Like, this is a movie that I saw, and I was happy that I watched it, but, you know, didn't think much more about it. I was surprised that it was getting all the Golden Globe love and all the Oscar love. And I was doubly surprised, literally shocked, that Mark, and particularly Sarah, advocated for us to cover this in this podcast. I mean, are we turning into a horror podcast? Am I taking over? What's going on here, guys?
Last time, yes, with Nosferatu, you were saying what horror is about is not jump scares. It's not, but it's about something that is horrifying, a horrifying spectacle. And certainly we have that. So we're now going to get into, I think we can't avoid spoiler territory here.
Warning, spoiler alerts.
I thought going into this that it was going to be a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing that or something like she was going to just transform. Not that she was going to split. So I actually felt like this is a really interesting sci-fi premise of, you know, it's like your clone, but you have to share. I wasn't really clear. Did they remember each other's experiences or did they just infer?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think so.
The fact that it was not clear to me. I mean, maybe that says something about the storytelling. Maybe it was more interesting if they did, because then it turns more into like, ooh, should I stay up late? Oh, then morning Mark will regret it if I drink too much now. Like, I really like that aspect as a personal identity reflection.
And no one seemed to think that Margaret Qualley's character, that Sue was the spitting image of Demi Moore from like St. Elmo's Fire. You know what I mean? Like no one was saying like, hey, did you get work done or something? Like, mm-hmm. what's up? How come you look like the 29-year-old version of yourself? No one even questions Margaret Qualley as Demi Moore.
That was a weird wrinkle because it does seem like, oh, if they're, it's you, it's like genetically identical to you. So why would it not just be, let's CGI the best young Demi Moore, not purposefully make them have different color eyes, because I guess the actresses have different color eyes.
No, they do.
They say it's the best version of your, there's a kind of throwaway line where they say like it's the best version of yourself. So I don't know if it's supposed to be an idealized version or just you younger. It's different than that. But also like on the broader point, I think you're right. The mechanics are very kind of unclear.
Very unclear.
But I think that's deliberate. And I think that's leveraged very good effect. So for instance, your point about what relationship Eliza and Sue have to one another psychologically is, I think, deliberately ambiguous in the film, because there are moments where Eliza is on the phone to the substance corporation, I guess, and saying, like, I want to make her stop. And the guy from the helpline is saying, no, it's you. It's up to you. You're this person. And it seems in those moments to me that Demi Moore is in denial about the relationship that she has with her other self. It does, and there are other points where she very much is acting like, no, I want to continue this because I want to be able to keep having these experiences. So I think it's muddled, and I think it's deliberate. Unusually for me, I think it's better that the sci-fi mechanics here are pretty vague.
Okay, I think we need to pause here, because Mark, just in case someone is listening to us because they just enjoy listening to us and they haven't seen the film, would you mind doing your standard kind of overview of what this film is about, just so people, because like Eliza is Demi Moore, Sue is Margaret Qualley, like just kind of do the overview just so people can kind of understand what we're talking about.
Sure. It's revealed in the first second of the film that this is about, this the substance is creates a clone of you, and as you say, it's the best, which this made me actually look up just now the Paul Rudd Living With Yourself. Did you guys see that series from 2019 already?
But no,
like,
no,
so he goes to a place.
Oh, no, I remember it though.
It's supposed to just improve you. And some of his friends have gone to it and they come back all invigorated and stuff. But what they're actually doing is making a clone of you that is genetically superior, that clears up something, and then killing the old you. But in his case, his old self is not killed successfully. So they're both running around. Yes. Anyway. To throw something in the middle of the summary, but that's why I like this film. There's multiple dimensions. Like, yes, we could talk about it as a meditation on aging, but we could also see it as a sci-fi cloning thing, as a meditation on personal identity, as a horror.
Okay, so Demi Moore is an aging woman in Hollywood.
I failed. Please go ahead. Yes. Yes.
And so she is concerned about aging. And so she looks around. She tries to find ways to make herself younger. But then she comes upon this service where she, you know, then the substance begins. I'm not good at overviews, Mark. That's your thing. I'm terrible at this.
I was just laughing because she finds herself in a hospital and she's being seen to by a doctor. And then this incredibly creepy guy is standing right next to the doctor and is like, hello, I'm Dr. Mephistopheles and I'm going to leave this syringe in your pocket with a very artful box design.
I thought the box design was lovely. The box design was amazing. I really enjoyed the box.
No, it was very Steve Jobsy, the whole product experience.
Yes, really it was.
Abusing the substance.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting too that the reason why she's in the hospital is because she has a terrible car accident, which immediately made me think like, oh, is this just what she sees before she dies? You know, like, is this actually real in the film's world? Not that it really matters. And how pathetic would that be if your last thoughts are about how your relevance is based on your outward appearance? That poor woman.
After the car crash, she finds this mysterious substance and calls a phone line and is informed that she can use this stuff in order to become the best version of herself. And what that amounts to in the real world is that she injects herself and then births a clone of herself who is very young and very beautiful. And only one of them can be conscious at any one time. So she embarks on like on a double life where she's living as the younger version of herself and also the current version of herself. But the longer that she spends in the younger version of herself's body, the older the current version of herself appears. So there's a Dorian Gray kind of motif going on mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. And the core tension of the movie, I guess, is that she wants to spend longer and longer in the younger version of herself's body, and that makes her become like really old and clone-like. And then there's some full-on like John Carpenter, David Cronenberg body horror going on at the third act devolves into a truly disgusting carnival of horrors that I think even Peter Jackson would struggle to sit through.
Very unpleasant.
I was laughing my ass off. I'm sorry.
Really?
I did not find it. I did not find it super. There was definitely a tribute to The Thing.
There was.
Yeah.
You know, one of the first disgusting, really disgusting movie I ever saw, of where somebody's head crawls away. So that was wonderful. It becomes more and more dreamlike. I mean, it's already pretty unrealistic in the first place and surreal, and the use of the camera work on Dennis Quaid as the sleazy executive. The way that's directed is so...
Yes, he was so yucky.
Gross. So I was questioning, are movies supposed to be true to their premises, such that if you think that this is a real meditation on just the fact that, hey, you can have this life, but you can only do it 7 days on, 7 days off. Well, you wouldn't actually get the advantages of being, so it's sort of a cheat, right? The conflict comes up because of the peculiarity in the specifics of the drug. And they already don't deal with, so it's not like, oh, I get to have all the advantages of being my younger self, but I have the knowledge that I had from being my old, you know, I can go right into how good was she at aerobics, at being an aerobics instructor when she was 20? Probably not good at all. But now she has all this knowledge. Like, so this would have been a sort of more straightforward, would you rather, would you go with this? But the fact that it was this very contrived situation that gave rise itself to all the conflict, I don't know, it in some ways would lessen the impact, right? Is it realistic that she would get this job just because she's so hot when there are lots of people that are so hot?
Yeah.
Especially there.
And the thing is that the Lizzie Sparkle character has a star on the Walk of Fame. She's won, did she win an Oscar or something? She was a movie star. She was A-list. And now in her 50s, she's doing aerobics videos, which is kind of like your slow decline. That's what you end up doing, right? Or at least that's what we've been taught. She's like, she's become Jane Fonda. And what does she do with her younger self? Is she goes right back to the aerobics videos. I was like, what are you doing, honey? Why don't you go and get, you know, a movie star job? Why don't you go back up to the A-list? But she ends up just kind of doing the same thing all over again with her quote unquote newer, better self. I just thought that was so, I mean, obviously, again, that was a deliberate decision on the part of the storytelling, but I thought that was really, really interesting. She went back to banging her head against the wall, you know, instead of looking for something better.
You're so right. And I hadn't even thought about that. But the fact that the movie frames like her crowning glory, like Sue's crowning glory, as this cheesy ass presenting job for New Year's Eve on a network TV show. And it is so pathetic. And then the very last shot is her head crawling over and satisfyingly lying down on her Hollywood star. It is shallow and pathetic. I also thought you were absolutely right, and Mark was dead wrong because of something that you said earlier, Sarah, which is that the tension in the film doesn't come out of the mechanics of the substance. It comes out of the surprising emotional relationship between the older and younger versions of it, mm-hmm. between Elizabeth and Sue, the fact that they detest each other but are codependent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's like when you set up just the mechanics as the substance, as you say, it sounds like a great deal. You know, you get to still be alive, but you also get to live your glory days alongside your current like old and wise times. But both of the characters grow to hate each other very, very quickly and don't mm-hmm. have a sense of themselves as being the same person. It's a codependent toxic relationship.
Yeah.
And that's where the tension comes from. That's where some of the horror comes from. Some of the horror also comes from disgusting blobs of flesh.
But it is that these two women are pitted against each other,
mm-hmm.
just like older mm. and younger women are often pitted against each other in real life, you know? I mean, I think half the reason why people get injectables, you know, they get fillers and Botox and Ozempic and all of that stuff is not just for the outward male gaze, but it's for the female gaze as well, you know, so that you can say, oh, look, I'm 50 and look how great, you know, I look 35, you know, because I've gotten all this crap in my face now.
So when we were trying to expand this, like what are the comparable films? You mentioned Neon Demon, Al, which I then watched.
Mm. Oh God, I saw that. Yes.
It's
so disturbing.
I found it kind of boring on a minute-by-minute basis.
Oh, really? Maybe it's my
undiagnosed ADHD coming through, but it was I did not have the patience. I mean, I got through it.
It's pretty deliberate.
The idea of that film, without spoiling it, is that there are some people that have a magic. So this is a counter to my, would she really get that job? Aren't there so many other beautiful people in Hollywood? Well, the premise of this film of Neon Demon is that there are a lot of beautiful people in Hollywood, but there are only some that are just magically beautiful, that are naturally, wonderfully, you know, and everybody else is trying to approximate that and wants to be that, which I don't buy. I find that they're like almost anybody that is the star of a major film, male or female, but especially, you know, we're talking about women's beauty here, is going to have something like you really want to look at them. I just think that is not as uncommon a quality as these films might have you think. I don't know if that's relevant, but there does seem to be something about not just I want to be young and beautiful, but I want to be the savior. I want to be, I'm not just a younger version of myself, but I'm somebody that everybody will stand on their heads to just be in the presence of because I'm so wonderful. And the substance added to that, though, this very, very creepy, like, we're going to put you in an aerobics video and just film the crack of your ass in a leotard disgusting way as you
like very
as you
porny.
Right, exactly.
It was so porny. And it was so, that was so clever because it was in the first act, the way that they were doing the workout video shots. And it's like, it was funny. It was so gratuitous and explicit. Although, of course, it turns out it's not gratuitous because what the film is doing is setting itself up to give you this horrific juxtaposition of like your head's full of over-sexualized images of this woman's body. And then it's setting you up to turn your stomach like 900 degrees mm-hmm. with subsequent shots of the same woman's body in much less, you know, flattering positions.
Indeed. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We often hear about red flags, you know, things we should avoid, but what if we focus more on looking for green flags in relationships? If you're not sure what they look like, therapy can help you identify green flags and actively practice them in your relationships and your friendships and embody green flag energy yourself. Whether you're dating, married, building friendships, or just working on yourself, it's time to form relationships that love you back. You know, I've been to therapy and I've learned that by going to therapy, it can help you to work on yourself and help you to, you know, figure out what is best for you. You know, therapy is not just for someone who has experienced a major trauma. It is a wonderful way to help learn positive coping skills and set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. BetterHelp is fully online. It makes therapy affordable and convenient, and it serves over 5 million people worldwide. Access a diverse network of more than 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties. You can even easily switch therapists at any time at no extra cost. Discover your relationship green flags with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/pretty today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/pretty. Visit BetterHelp today.
Did anybody do a rewatch of Death Becomes Her?
I did.
I watched the preview, but I remember it pretty well.
You remember it pretty well. Yeah, I did too, but I watched it again.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch it. I wanted to, but I didn't get to see it again. But it is a great movie.
It's a great movie.
It's a really good movie.
I mean, Meryl Streep obviously is going to bring, as you say, Lawrence, the gravitas to anything, right? For anything that she's in, even in that goofy movie. And to see two women, and I also think that Demi Moore does this in this part too, is that these are people who are really shells of people. You know, I think we're meant to feel sorry for them or even dislike them. I mean, I hope that we don't relate to them as deeply as maybe we do, but, or I guess I can speak for myself, but like some of the stuff that Meryl Streep was talking about in that role, she really kind of humanizes her for the audience and really makes us understand that to be an actor in this business where so much of your identity is wrapped up in how you look, that of course you're going to go through the end of your career in your 50s, like, what the hell? We're supposed to be at the height of our powers in our 50s, you know? I mean, this is when you become CEO of wherever your company, you've put in, you know, you've already paid all your dues. This is the time when you should be celebrating. And this is the time when Hollywood often throws women out, basically.
Once you hit 22, you're 21. That's in the Neon Demon. They say it's not 50, it's like 21. They're reflecting on modeling, I guess, specifically.
Yeah. I don't think that men escape this kind of treatment either. I think we've all kind of absorbed those messages. But at the same time, just watching Demi Moore and watching Death Becomes Her, especially with What's-Her-Face's character, I just was like...
Goldie Hawn?
No, not Goldie Hawn. Goldie Hawn, actually, she's a writer. You know what? Mm-hmm. You can be ugly and be a writer. Like, that's fine. You can save your money on Ozempic. You can save your money on on fillers and stuff. Because you should, because you're not making a lot of money as a writer. but as an actress, you know, there are still so few, you know, older women who are consistently making a living off of high-budget movies and stuff and television shows.
You're right. I think it's different for men, though, because... there is some pressure on men, but you think about, yeah, Robert Gere, and his hair turns gray and
Richard
he becomes
Gere,
like a
yeah.
Richard Gere. God damn
Richard
it.
Gere.
I'm thinking about Robert Zemeckis, who directed Death Becomes Her. Richard Gere, his hair turns gray. He becomes a silver fox. He's very sexy, right? You know, so there is a thing where men are able to kind of age, whereas women are not as allowed to age as much. Both in Hollywood and honestly in society, you know, especially in the age of social media, people love to go on social media, post pictures of themselves. Like, for example, post pictures of J-Lo. Can you believe she's 50? Like, you know, they love to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the commentary is evergreen. I thought that the substance was good. I just, man, the body horror, like the end of the movie turned me off so much. That it was just kind of hard for me to kind of rally. I mean, it just really, really was, because I was very intrigued moving up until about the last 40 minutes of the film, and then it just went off the rails for me. I wish that it was a little less gory, because I think that it would be very much more widely watched than it is. Like, it's getting all this Oscar love, but are people really going to want to watch it? You know, it was hard for me.
You were asking at the beginning, are we now a horror movie podcast? And I felt like, this is not a horror movie until the last bit. Mm-hmm. It is just an interesting sci-fi dramatic kind of thing with some surrealist things. And this going off the rails, this is what I was worrying about. By taking more of the original drug, she becomes this mutant hybrid. A monster is born of the Margaret Qualley thing, because the Margaret Qualley is falling apart. If you had trouble suspending disbelief about other things, the idea that this creature could then like paste the Demi Moore poster to her face and somehow get all the way to the New Year's Eve thing. And they let her on stage because nobody notices. Nobody. Like,
it was so silly. It was just over the top.
And then they see this person express this. And instead of saying, oh my gosh, what kind of horrible mistake is this? They point at her and yell, monster, monster. Like, this is somebody's bad dream. This is not...
It's very surreal. Very surreal. It's not grounded, which is not a bad thing. I mean, you know, Lynch just passed away recently. I love pretty much all his films. And a lot, all those films are very surrealistic. So I'm not asking for the film to be grounded, but it's just... it feels like it doesn't know what it wants to be sometimes. Like sometimes it's very surreal. Sometimes it kind of plays with being grounded. And the further the film goes, the more surreal it becomes. I don't know, man. I don't know. And I'm not hating on the film. I don't dislike the film. It's just uneven in parts.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of it being a commentary on addiction? Did you guys read that article? That made so much sense to me because even if you're saying the substance could be, you know, Ozempic, whatever the hot thing is right now, right? You have to take that forever if you want to maintain the status quo, knowing that the best you're ever going to look is right now. You know, it's all downhill from here, right? So you have to take that stuff forever and it becomes an addiction. And you can really see those parallels between Demi Moore's character and wanting to keep that high, you know?
Yeah, I didn't see the article you mentioned, but I did read that in the film specifically because of the way it presented Demi Moore as paying the physical price for what this other person was doing and also being unable to stop, like this clear addiction there because she's just not psychologically able to stop, even though she knows that she has to, and it is literally killing her.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that she can do to stop, but also the sense that she has that this person is the better version of herself, which we all know from the outside, like, isn't true. This other person is awful. And Demi Moore was much, like, she was sad and kind of pathetic, but she was much, like, more admirable person when she was sober, in inverted commas. But she thinks that the substance is what she needs to become the best version of herself that everybody will like. And, like, yeah, the addiction metaphor is really very clear.
You're reminding me, this is why I thought that they have continuity of memories, because she runs into, when she's back in her old self, younger than me, you know, whatever. Her relatively old self, I'm not older, over 60. I'm stating this wrong, but she runs into the person that she, as a younger person, had just slept with. And she clearly recognizes him and he snubs her. So it's not, I don't think it's just the director saying, oh, look at this contrast. It's like, she could at any point say, oh, no, it's me, you know, or whatever. But she doesn't choose to do that. I also thought of eating disorder sort of thing in terms of the addiction angle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The most unpleasant things are the decisions that she as an older person makes. If she had love, right, if she had a relationship, she couldn't do any of this thing as a regular person. And she has the chance to go on a date. And it's not even a good date. But she's like, oh, I'm not up for that.
Oh, so sad.
I'm not good enough for being, you know, and it's not subtle. Like when she runs into another person, you know, it turns out the person who recommended the drug to her in the first place, he's like, you got to remember that your older self deserves to continue to exist. Or is it the person on the phone that tells her that? Anyway, so this is not something you have to read out of it. It's like they just deliver this right up to you. And then the other thing, right, the first time she calls and says, I want to terminate this, is when the younger version has stolen a little time from her and now her finger is withered. And like that was the point at which, yeah, she could have stopped it and realized this was a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the fact that she can't make those two steps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned that she can't get out of herself enough to be able to go on a date with a nice person, you know, who is her age, you know, and thinks that she's attractive at her age, which she is. It becomes about her self-hatred. I think it's not only is it about like she can't find love, she can't even love herself. She can't even like herself, you know? She has that stupid big picture of her past self sitting in her fancy apartment in her living room, you know, this giant portrait of herself in a leotard. And I just think, oh my God, it's just, and that took me right back to Sunset Boulevard, where she's got pictures of herself from the silent era dotted all over the place. I mean, just her entire living room is crowded with her past self. And it's, that can't be, that's not a healthy way to live, right?
Well, in the great Sunset Boulevard directed by Billy Wilder, it's a horror movie. I mean, that's what that movie is. I mean, it's a Hollywood horror movie, and it is not the healthy way to be. You know, I think the film is pretty clear on that. And so I saw those kind of echoes with Sunset Boulevard, the pictures, the obsession with youthfulness and trying to get it back and all the kind of stuff. But what's fascinating to me is that this is not born both in Sunset Boulevard and in The Substance, this is not born out of they're completely broke and destitute. It's just they have a desire to kind of go back into that world. And that's really what's interesting to me, because it would be different if it was like me and I'm broke and I need money to put food on the table to survive, you know, then I got to do it. But that's not necessarily the motivation for, you know, always. That's really interesting to me.
It's obsession. I was thinking, like, I know that guys don't get this as much, but I still think, like, Hugh Jackman, there's nobody who works harder at being Hugh Jackman than Hugh Jackman. You know, he's in his 50s. He is still working out every day, or like The Rock or something. You know, they are really chasing, working as hard as they possibly can to continue the image that they present to the public. And it becomes just obviously harder and harder and harder. I mean, you look at, I mean, Madonna, nobody works harder at trying to still be Madonna than Madonna, you know? But at the same point, you know, you think, what does an evolution of Madonna or Demi Moore look like? What is that? We don't know what that's supposed to be. There are just too few examples.
I think it was Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo who said, you know, in referring to the short period of time when Whip It was like a huge song and they were touring the world. It's like everybody should try that for a couple of years. You know, in other words, having the to gracefully say, wow, I actually got to be the center of attention. I'm glad I'm not doing that anymore. Like, and let it go and live a normal life. Of course, that is the, you know, the sane alternative to what we've been talking about.
Well, and it does also sound like boomers who refuse to retire and step aside and let other people take those jobs. I mean, there's another side to this coin too, where you do have people who have had the limelight. They've made a lot of money. They've been very successful. They've been worshipped for a long time, and it's time to step aside and let somebody else take their place. I mean, I don't know if I wholly agree with that, but, you know.
Reminds me of Succession.
I mean, we're seeing it in the real life. Yeah.
That was what Succession was all about. That dude would just step aside and not die on an airplane. Things would have worked out much better all around.
Spoiler alert. Jeez, Lawrence.
Oh, man, this is years past. Get out. And we did a whole podcast over you. Get out of here. If you don't know what Succession is about and how it ends, I'm sorry. Everyone ends happy.
I had not seen Sunset Boulevard. I wasn't aware. You know, I knew the I'm ready for my close up, Mr. DeMille. Like, I knew that line, but I didn't know what that was from. Mm-hmm. Or that's actually what I had in mind in, like, because at some point they were like, you're 50. And like, well, maybe back in 1945. Is that when the movie's from? Right.
That was from 1950, I think.
1950. You're right.
Yeah.
Maybe that was considered super old.
It was.
The 1945 was the Picture of Dorian Gray, which I did not watch, sort of the most famous film version of that. But it seemed like a relevant thing if I had more appetite to take on. But I'm really glad that I watched Sunset Boulevard. The insanity of the character who can't let go of her past self.
Played by the great Gloria Swanson. Such a great performance.
Oh, my God.
She was so
amazing.
And
the writing was so great. I just
rewatched
it last night.
I'm telling you, man, that was such a good
night.
Movie. Such
it
a good movie.
It is such a great watch.
Yeah, man. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mark.
No, it's – I mean, of course, there's the grossness of – how old is the young woman? 18, 20 or something that then middle age, you know, oh, it would be absurd for this guy who's what, 35 or whatever to be dating a 50-year-old, but for him to be dating a 19 or 20-year-old, whatever.
Perfectly
well, that's
fine.
just normal.
Yeah,
And she is a writer. And as you said, you don't have to be beautiful to be a writer, but she's like, you know, the most beautiful thing. So there's dated. I don't know if that movie was remade right now, if it would be. Has that movie been remade?
It better not have been.
It's been on Broadway.
Broadway's different. I'm talking about remade as a movie. They better not remake that movie. You don't remake Billy Wilder movies. That is not acceptable. I would not stand for that. Leave him alone.
I mean, I like the fact that in there, everybody's like, oh, I thought she was dead. She's so old. And that Cecil B. DeMille himself or some of the other, like, well, I'm like twice as old as her, so I don't know what you're talking about. You know, acknowledging that it's a different standard when you're in front of the camera and probably when you're a woman. So it's not just a you know, something about aging in general.
You know what, though? One of the things that I studied back when I was getting my master's was about women and work and how that – is reflected in literature. And I really liked the fact that in all of these films, women working was taken really seriously. Like, those women who have careers were taken seriously. No one said, oh, yeah, you know, just wait, you'll get pregnant and then you'll go and raise babies and go away. I like the fact that all of these films that we're talking about take work very seriously and that it has meaning for these women, that it is a part of their identities. And it's something that I don't think is explored enough, actually. And then to take that away, to take that work away, is like slicing a piece of themselves off.
I was just wondering how that point relates to the fact that Sue is infantilized at work, like everyone around her.
Mm-hmm.
Great point.
But you're right that it's serious to her.
Yeah.
And the film makes sure that we know that it's serious to her, but she's not really like a girl boss in the way that Demi Moore is, much less Meryl Streep.
It's a wonderful point.
Yeah, but I think also the film itself is taking their work seriously.
Well, the
men in surrounding these women may not take their work seriously, but I think the film does, and I think the female characters do.
That's a good point.
What is also super interesting about that is you could easily see other versions of both of these movies where the primary motivating factor for them wanting to look younger is just directly so that they can get a man, right? Or they can be attractive to men, but it's not. And it's the same patriarchal issue, but it's not about the man. It's about, like, respect, work and respect.
Yeah. I think this goes all the way back to, like, the yellow wallpaper. Like, you don't have anything to do. You're going to go crazy.
Mm-hmm. Man, I haven't thought about the yellow wallpaper in years.
Oh, that's such a good story.
I think if you're well known for producing exercise videos and you get knocked off the network show where you are doing an exercise show, you just sell exercise videos yourself. You just continue that revenue stream and all those faithful aging viewers are not going to be interested in seeing the ass of a 20-year-old. But it seems a little beside the point to be making practical suggestions of more healthy ways of.
I think that's a good point, if only because the movie maybe missed a trick, because they could have maybe established that she didn't need the money, and that would have been an interesting additional thing. Because you could easily see that, like, a woman who has been that kind of movie star maybe doesn't need financially to go on making third-rate exercise TV shows, but it's important to her to...
I'm sorry, Al, they are first-rate exercise video shows. Don't demean the exercise video whole ethos.
I think this is just my view on the whole genre. I don't feel like they actually go higher than third. But
Jane Fonda was very, and don't forget, you know, Tybo, top notch, man, really, really good.
That's true, Tom.
I did have those VHS tapes, yes.
And Richard, what's his name?
Richard Simmons. R.I.P.
Richard Simmons.
He was third rate. I never liked him.
Oh, he was.
Aw. No, but I think it goes so much deeper than that, because I don't think that the Lizzie Sparkle character, she could have sold that apartment, moved to Ohio, disappeared and lived her life, right? But she didn't do that. That's not what she chose to do. There was something about her that needed to be seen. And once her awful agent was like, no, you need to just disappear and go away because nobody wants to see a 50-year-old woman on screen anymore. Again, that's how she sees herself, is how others see her. And that's the same with the Gloria Swanson character, right? Norma Desmond she has all the money in the world, right? All the money in the world, but all she wants is to be seen again. And nobody wants that.
But that's something about being an actress. You have to be a certain kind of person to want to be an actress on that level. There's just something about you. And very rarely do you have like a Bridget Fonda who will just disappear and is perfectly fine walking away. A lot of these people who are actresses, actors, who've had a taste of success, even those who haven't had a taste of success, they pursue it. They keep going after it. That's what they want. And I think that this is a commentary on just, this is who they are. And them being who they are leads them to making these kinds of decisions. It's kind of tragic in a way that these people are kind of wired to be this way. And in being wired to be this way, it oftentimes leads them down a path where they're looking at a doctor in a hospital who's really creepy and gives them a box and something bad happens.
I definitely agree with that for sure. But that idea of being seen for who you are isn't just about putting yourself up on a billboard or something, or Indeed. Putting yourself on a screen.
Indeed.
Right? And so often, once women hit middle age, they're no longer seen anymore, you know? No, it's true.
I mean, I'm gonna defer to you on that one, because in my world, older Black women, for example, are revered. You know, we love them. We put them up on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. But in other areas, other realms, I can definitely see how that happens. I think that might be a cultural thing with me. But you're right that in the culture writ large, that is definitely how many, I don't even call them older women. They're 50. They're not old. You know, like, it's just, no. You know, but you know, yeah, right. As women age, oftentimes they are cast aside in many places, in many ways.
And I think, like, if you're not grounded in, you know, and I was joking at the beginning, I am actually the happiest I've ever been. I'm 53 years old. I am the happiest I've ever been. I have a wonderful partner in Josh. I have a great kid. I've got two wonderful cats. You know, I have a great job. I have wonderful podcast partners. I feel like I'm at the height of my powers in a lot of ways now. But if all of my worth was based on, you know, whether or not somebody is whistling at me on the street or something, I would have some serious problems. And I think that, or that I, you know, if I'm not getting the attention that I think I deserve from the outside, then that's a real issue, because that kind of attention definitely has diminished in middle age, for sure, that kind of attention. And I never particularly liked that kind of outside attention when I was in my 20s and 30s anyway. So actually, this has been just a fine little pivot for me. If I wasn't happy in my own way and didn't have, you know, a lot of the privilege of a nice job and being able to feel seen in the ways that I find important, I can see why this would be a really terrible time for a lot of people.
You're making me think I should stop putting the filter on your voice that makes you sound like a baby every single episode, because I just felt like people would really want to.
I'm a little squeaky anyway, so.
I think you overstated the greatness of your podcast co-host. I don't know if we're that great.
I've just proved that wrong by that comment.
I think the most impressive thing that you said to me was the fact that you have two nice cats.
Yeah, usually the odds are one of them is a jerk.
How dare you?
I've never met a cat that I liked. I'm just being honest with you.
Well, I'm now a cat lady.
Except Garfield. Garfield's cool.
I guess just let me return one more time. So in saying that I like the sci-fi premise of this, I'm always intrigued about, right, if this was a novel, then there would be discussions about, like, ID. How do the logistics work? How do you get your younger self to inherit money from you? So any sort of story about somebody that lives forever, never ages, and they have the issue of, like, okay, well, every 10 years when people start to look at me funny, I move abroad, and then I come back as my grandchild that I've left my money to, or something like that.
That's like, you know, vampire, so you, problems.
Right, exactly. So this is this is very much adjacent to the vampire issue, right? Because you're basically engaging in identity theft, or, but I guess she doesn't want to be
Sue doesn't want anything to do with Lizzie.
Oh my goodness, I didn't think about it, didn't you?
It's good that this film is so interesting, because, like, really early on I was thinking, actually, we should have just made this episode about, like, cloning, sci-fi cloning scenarios. Because we've been talking about Severance, and that's another, like, really good. And
then
there's
very good point.
What's the other movie that Jordan Peele has made two movies about this theme now, right? In
Us,
yeah. And obviously being John Malkovich and all of these kinds of things. But yeah, I feel like Mark is mainly interested in getting into the logistics of what it's like.
Well, so I'm trying to get past that with this, that this is a fever dream.
What happens
surrealist
to the social security number?
What about our fingerprints? Are they the same?
I was just thinking about fingerprints. I didn't want to say it. I was just thinking about it. Thank you for saying that.
But once you get unmoored from worrying about what I was calling the truth of the premise, you know, trying to make it plausible and you just say, it's just a fable, just go with it. I guess emotionally it has to resonate is the alternative. So the fact that they do not recognize that we are one self and play as a team. And so when she is a younger person is being interviewed about her older self, she could have been like, oh, I'm the biggest fan of Sparkle and I learned every one of her moves and that's why I'm able to just jump in. No, she like is very dismissive, like, oh, I never watched the show. I know it was as if she would just by becoming younger gain a whole new idea of how to do her show. This is another thing that occurred to me is just because she's young, she would still have the same very strong ideas about how to do her show exactly the old way. And that would run into some creative conflicts. But that no, that's not the way they're paying this. It's her hating herself as her current self. So she has to have a wholesale rejection of everything about her. But as if she is the one who's responsible for, let's make it really porny. Let's make my show as opposed to being infantilized.
Oh, no, but I thought, I mean, this is what I thought you were saying, but I read that as being an expression of Demi Moore's own self-loathing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The way that Sue talks about Demi Moore is the way that Demi Moore actually
feels about herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's that idea of like youth is wasted on the young. And I mean, when you're young, you're not going around going, hey, I'm 25 and I'm going to do 25-year-old stuff and look at my butt and all that kind of stuff. You know, you're not doing that. In fact, there's often a lot of some serious self-hatred going on when you're in your 20s as well, you know?
That's very true.
And it can be based on your outward appearance. I know. People are awful. We're so terrible to ourselves.
Yeah. Just like imagine being that there's a whole – the most unbelievable thing, logistics aside, the most unbelievable thing for me about that whole film was just that Demi Moore could be like worried about how she looks.
Oh my God. I know. And she's also, she's playing 50 and she's in her late 50s. I think she's pushing 60.
I think she's 61. 62. I thought the character was supposed to be that old.
Mm-hmm. The character's 50 on the day.
Yeah.
It's her
50th birthday.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She's in her 60s. Yeah. So that's how. Yeah, that's how great she looks.
That's a weird choice because if you're making that movie with that theme and that subtext, and your star is 60, and presumably when they were making it, she was 60 and super hot. Just make the character 60 instead. I would watch it because even in the context of this film, nobody wants to watch a 60-year-old woman on film. We have to pretend that she's 50.
I guess the suspension of disbelief. Right. This is why I was, you know, in Neon Demon, like, would she have even been able to last to 50? Certainly not to 60. Like, if you're going to buy the premise of this film that like the studio executives are such assholes that they're going to boot you off of TV because you're too old, then they would have booted you off. They would not have let you get to 60. I think that is why they could not. That would violate the premise to have her be have been allowed to be in the public space for the last, I wouldn't say just a decade. It should be like as soon as you turn 40. Then they're like, none of this, if you were going to be consistent with the theme.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I felt like at the beginning she had achieved a sense of her set. Like, right, nobody cared how old Jane Fonda was when she was doing these things. Like, she could,
yes,
she
they
could
did.
Continue. Okay.
They absolutely cared. They absolutely cared.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
I don't know the story of this.
Yeah, so. I don't know the story either. I just don't know the story.
She was making videotapes for women in their 40s so that they could look and feel as young as they felt, you know? I mean, no, absolutely. Yeah, Jane Fonda, oh, she had it rough. I mean, they gave her a lot of shit for aging.
Really?
For sure.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Didn't know that.
And just the very fact that she was doing that, right, is a consequence of her being a all-time great actress who had the audacity to live longer than 35.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's only been relatively recently that she's actually kind of come back and been able to act on screen again. I don't think she ever was not political, but now, you know, she's been able to voice her politics again.
Yeah, she was always political.
But maybe that's the privilege of being in your 80s. You know, it's like, okay, go away when you're 40, 50, 60. Come back when you're really old. Then we'll appreciate you. Great.
you just have to get old enough that you just don't give a shit anymore.
Yes. Yes.
This is a moving target. I think it was Marc Maron in his thing was like, now 50 is like, hey, my band's playing around the corner. You should come and see us later. Like, that's what 50 is now. We have maybe it's different again, but for men and women, or, you know, for what the context is. But it does seem like that this film is, I guess this is the the idea with a lot of social commentary is once it's acceptable for this film to be made, that already means that the message has already gotten better. It's better than it was in 1950. No?
Certainly. I was just about to ask that question. Is this a movie that is 10 years past its relevance? You know, so you have Meryl Streep who's still acting. You have a lot of people who are getting older. You know, Viola Davis, all these other individuals, they have flourishing careers. Because this was certainly a thing 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Is it still a thing? That's the question that I have.
First response is saying no, obviously it's still relevant. But I think the better response is that, yeah, I think you're right if that was the whole of the film. But I think it's rich enough that it's dealing with...
It's definitely
it's a lot more interesting than just a surface level, isn't Hollywood patriarchy awful, that it gets into some really juicy stuff about the internal psychology of dealing with that, and there's all the, you know, the addiction stuff and everything. And just as a piece of filmmaking, it is creative and skillful and really good fun in parts, even though it's disgusting. So it's a reasonable point, but I wouldn't go nearly so far as to say it was like old hat or uncreative in any way.
I don't necessarily think things have gotten better, but I do think it's interesting. I read an article, and I may have mentioned this before. You've got these women in their 50s who were A-list stars, Demi Moore, Nicole Kidman, doing some of their best work now, taking risks on film. In a way, they really have had to make a big shift. You know, she, Demi Moore called herself a popcorn actress in her speech at the Golden Globes. And she is no longer valued as a popcorn actress. You know, she's not going to be in G.I. Jane 2, you know? Whereas you've got people like Clooney and Pitt who are making Wolfs, where they're essentially still kind of dining on the same image that they've had for the last 30 years, you know? Women can't do that anymore. I think that's really, really interesting. And then, you know, Clooney and Pitt make a kind of a boring movie called Wolfs. You know, it was fun and everything, but it's like, so what? You know, whereas we're actually talking, we're not talking about Wolfs, we're talking about The Substance.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about Wolves in my personal life because I really enjoyed that film, even though you're shitting on it. But
we can talk about that.
It was fine.
I'm actually kidding. I didn't like that movie that much at all.
It does seem like women have to create a new, well, what do you think of this? So like they have to become character actors, and it might be the same for older men, but I'm not sure if that's as clear, but like, I don't even remember Jean Smart as a younger person. Like it's, oh, I see a clip from Designing Women. Like, oh, yeah, that's
she was in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, she was, but she wasn't like the presence. So it wasn't like a return. It's like this has been her star just rising, rising, rising in these later years, which is kind of amazing that like that you can do that at that age.
She's now in her 70s. So she is not in middle age anymore. And so she can take a risk like that. And we will, or it seems like the public has totally bought it. I actually love that show that she's in. But I don't know that she could have pulled that off 20 years ago. 20 years ago, I don't know what she was doing. I wasn't paying attention to her.
Or Kate Winslet, right?
She keeps doing stuff.
Yeah.
She keeps taking risks.
That's your point about like character actors. Don't mind. I think that the super interesting point is where's the A-list personality actor rather than the character actors like your George Clooney's or your Tom Cruise or whoever else. Like, are there women who are the equivalents who've been able to continue to have that kind of career? I can't think of any.
On that same level, I can't think of any either. Not really.
Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, yeah.
You were saying.
Jennifer Lopez.
I don't know. Jennifer Lopez, she is having a decent career, but early in her career, she was making really good movies, very popular movies. Now she's on streaming, you know? Like, she's not opening up mainstream movies like that anymore. You know, she's doing Marry Me. Wasn't that the Jennifer Lopez movie? Marry Me.
Right. Yes.
Amazon. That's what you know?
She continues to try and do the same thing over and over again. I mean, I haven't seen the new movie with Pamela Anderson. I really would like
that's
to.
That's really good. It's
but
really
that
good.
Is a big shift for her. You know? She has had to completely kind of reinvent herself in that way. I mean, I don't know. Jamie Lee Curtis, again, who is also big star in the 80s. She's made a huge comeback now as a character actress, to your point, Mark. Mm. But she's had to reinvent herself once again, and she's really successful.
So I guess the argument we're making here is that actresses have to reinvent themselves, but men are allowed to just continue to be who they are.
Yeah, I would say that. Hmm. I would make that argument. If you're lucky enough to be allowed back in, you know, mm-hmm. there are countless actors who do go away, whether or not they want it.
Ultimately, it's just the fact that by the grace of the patriarchy, as men age, we can just be sexy in a different way, whereas women don't get to do that.
Men can be silver foxes.
Sure.
As they say.
Exactly.
I'm moving into my silver fox age now. I have gray hair on my chin. Mark's there. We're moving into that era, man.
I know. Even I'm getting a few gray hairs.
Well, let's wrap up the main discussion here. We'll keep talking about some other things in the after talk. You can get that at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.
Do it.
Thanks, everybody, for hanging out.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.